Hi, it's Jim Brickman.
Hi, this is Martha Reeves of Martha and the Vandellas.
I'm Benny.
And I'm Frida.
And I'm Agneta.
And I'm Bjorn from ABBA.
This is Percy Faith.
I'm Jason Mraz.
You're listening to The Sounds of Christmas.
Podcast.
Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to The Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. I am very excited to have David Arkenstone with us today. David, thank you so much for making time for the podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Now, I have seen you described, referred to in a bunch of different ways, and I wasn't sure which one was the right one to introduce you. I mean, anybody who's people who are listening to this podcast probably know who you are already anyway, but instead of just picking one, I kind of wanted to use them all. Five-time Grammy nominee.
That's just a fact.
One of the best contemporary instrumentalists of our time. And I like this one because people in the music business like to pigeonhole artists into one particular thing. But for you, I've seen neoclassical, crossover, new age, Celtic, orchestral, world music performer, composer.
Somebody wrote that in one sentence. Wow.
Yes. And I kind of wonder what got left out.
Probably rock, unless you mentioned rock.
Not unless that's included. No, that's not included in any of these.
Because one time I heard, which I thought wasn't bad, was cinematic new age rock. I heard that one. And I came from a rock background, so maybe that's why some of the music is... You know, I remember some of the songs on In the Wake of the Wind, they started to sound a little rock and roll. So the rock and roll that I grew up on, which was the progressive rock, kind of Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and yes, that kind of rock probably has infiltrated my music in places.
And I think this one is, well, it's hard to pick a favorite, but I really like that you were referred to as a musical storyteller.
I love that because that means somebody gets what I'm trying to do. And, yeah. And I think that's nice.
Credentials. I don't think you've crossed 80 studio albums yet, but you're getting close. Six yeah. collaboration albums, 7 compilations, a live album, 17 soundtracks, 1.1 billion streams. And that number is probably old and it's probably higher now. Gaming scores for NBC Sports, for the Kentucky Derby, Premier League Soccer, among others. And one that I have to ask you about, a number of songs for World of Warcraft. How did that happen?
That happened because I have to go back 20 or 30 years, well, maybe 20 years. A gentleman who used to work for Disney named Russell Brower, he programmed a couple songs of mine from In the Wake of the Wind at Epcot. And I used to get a lot of emails about that. Oh, I heard your music at Epcot. I was like, what? And so I went and I heard it. So it was cool at Disney World. And then he ended up getting employed by Blizzard, who makes games, and asked me if I wanted to do some stuff for one of their moments in the game. And then that just grew into, I've been doing that for about 12 years now, on and off. You know, they have expansions every year and they'll call me up and say, hey, we need something, you know, and it's really fun to do that.
Yeah. And I would imagine that, I mean, it fits in with the musical storyteller, but it's also, you know, it's one more thing that's different than a lot of the other stuff you do.
Oh yeah. It's way different. Plus we record with a real orchestra, a full orchestra.
Wow.
And, it's just a thrill to hear your music, you know, that you sit in your studio and you write it out and then you blow it up giant size. And it's really nice and epic. And it's just a joy to work with them.
Very cool. Winterlude is just out and we're going to get to that in a minute. But I was looking at a couple different discographies of yours online and it looks like 9 Christmas or winter themed albums. Does that sound right?
It just sounds like a lot, but it sounds right.
I want to get to the new one, but I want to touch on these others because they're all different. Right. And it, you know, it's not Jingle Bell Rock over and over again. I think the first one was Enchantment, A Magical Christmas. What would you want people to know about that?
Well, that was on Narada, and that was called from... Narada used to do these compilations where all the artists would do one song, and I was on the first one, and I was on all of them, I think. And I actually remember the first one, my song, I Saw Three Ships, was the last song on the record. And when I got the record and found out, I was a little disappointed. I thought, oh man, I'm way at the end. But then I realized that that's the last song people are going to hear. And so that turned into a groovy thing. And now I hear it in shopping centers and things. And it's pretty exciting. But that was kind of a collection of things I had done for the compilations, plus I added some songs.
And I think I Saw Three Ships. I don't know if it's the same version, but I think that's the video on the front of your YouTube channel.
Yeah, it is. It's the same version. Although I've done several songs, you know, when you're talking about nine Christmas albums or winter themed albums, you know, I've repeated myself, and I've done songs I like to do, and I've done them in different ways each time.
I was going to say you've repeated yourself, but you really haven't, because they're different arrangements, different interpretations. Right. I know of at least two different versions of Deck the Halls. I play both of them. Mm-hmm. They're from different albums, and they sound different. I could play them back to back even.
Yeah.
Christmas yeah. Pan Pipes.
That was a commission, as was Celtic Christmas and Native Christmas, by the company that I've done a bunch of records for called Green Hill Music. They're in Nashville. And they were just, they just brought up the panpipe thing. And I thought, okay, yeah, I can try that. And we did. And people seemed to like it. You know, I think at the time, maybe panpipes were super popular. I don't know. But, you know, it was a fun commission to do that.
And I think that was about the same time that Christmas Spirit came out also.
It was close. You know, it might have been I don't think it was the same year, though, because the Christmas Spirit came out first. That was the one I had done earlier. And that was sort of, they wanted a piano-based project, which was fine with me because it's a lot easier than getting a bunch of people together. But I did that with, you know, synthesizer backing and a little bit of percussion. I think there's one of my favorite versions of Drummer Boy that I've done, I think, is on that recording. But I'm not positive, actually.
And then a few years later, Christmas Lounge.
That was really something because we actually do one of the songs in our tour, and they came up with that. And I was like, well, I know Christmas music and I kind of know lounge music, but wow. You know, I had to kind of do some research and I had to really play around with some songs to get the vibe. But people really loved that record. You know, we do a version of the Sugar Plum from the Nutcracker in concert, and people just love it. You know, it's kind of like the version I did was, I like to say, it's like if James Bond was chasing a bad Santa through a Christmas party. That's what it says.
And that's what I'll see the next time I hear it.
Sure. Probably. Because I put the James Bond chord in there. So, you know, when you hear it, you can't miss it.
Snowfall. Is that the first sort of winter themed one that you did?
Yeah, I was doing, I was just experimenting with, you know, synthesizers have come such a long way during my career, from when I was in high school and they were just invented till now, where you can put one finger down and kind of make a record. They have textures and things. And that album was kind of like when synthesizers were beginning to make these really nice textures and things like that. And that was, yeah. And Snowfall, just like Winterlude, is just my take on the emotions and moods that I feel when I'm in winter.
Is that sort of the same theme behind Winter Fantasy?
That was different. That was a different one. We did some covers on that song, on that album, and I worked with a great vocalist named Charlie Brooks, and we did a bunch of different songs, and because she was, well, because I had a vocalist at my disposal, we could do a bunch of songs that I really hadn't done before. You know, a couple old English songs, Wassail, and the Darkest Night of the Year I had found, and I really wanted to do those songs, and so we were able to do that, and we actually brought a choir in for that and stuff, and wrote several original songs as well as the covers.
I love Carol of the Bells and The Bells of Christmas off that.
Yeah.
Love those.
Thank you. Thank you, by the way, for being so thoroughly prepared.
Well, I refer to myself often as a Christmas music weirdo, because I love it all. And I love music in general, but one of the things I love about Christmas music is that there isn't a lot of the genre boxing that you get on almost everything else. You can have, you know, we've talked about all these albums that you've done that they're all different, and they are different styles, and that's okay with Christmas music. Nobody says anything. You can do a rock song, and you can do neoclassical crossover, and and everything in between, and that's fine, and nobody says anything. And I just love that about Christmas music. And I've been a big fan of yours, and I'm always excited when there's a new one coming out. And I saw that Winterlude was coming late in the summer. I saw that was coming out. And with the name, I wasn't sure if this was going to be another Christmas lounge or something different. And it is something different. It's experiences at this time of year.
Yeah, it is something different. It's not holiday music. If I had my blurb up, I'd read it to you, but it's really my impressions of what winter means to me in an idealized way, like not having to drive through the snowy slush or whatever. You know, I think the thing that spearheaded it was we toured in Colorado last year at wintertime, and there was just some beautiful, the mountains, because they're so tall, they're just covered in white the whole time, and it was just beautiful driving from city to city. But then, because I had been kicking around an idea of doing a winter themed record for a couple of years, and then I just decided to do it. And it's just, you know, I say idealized because, you know, I grew up outside of Chicago till I was about 8, and all we did was just get to play in the snow. You know, we didn't have to worry about, you know, the heating bill. We didn't have to worry about anything. So I go back to some of those memories. And then I spent some time in Switzerland in the winter on a lake, and that just spawned two or three songs because it was just gorgeous. But the thing that about winter, which is so rare when you don't live there, because I live in California and I have to go to winter to find it, and either by touring or just traveling, is when you're in a snowfall, there's no wind, could be in front of your house or in a forest or whatever, and the big flakes are coming down. It's like magic to me. It's like nature's magic, because it's so silent. It's just so quiet. You can't even hear. It just absorbs all sound around it. You could be a half a mile from a freeway and you wouldn't hear it. But that's just a moment that I've had two or three times in my life, and that was enough to kind of spur me on.
For anyone who has not had the opportunity to experience that, you just can't imagine what that's like. I was a radio brat for about 30 years, and I was in Cincinnati for a few years, and one of those years, we got snow on Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. And we went outside, and it didn't last long and it didn't stick, but there was just something that was magical about it. And as it's falling, it's absolutely silent.
Yeah.
I mean, we're across the river from downtown, and it should have been noisy and bustling and all this, but
yeah,
just silent and magic.
Yeah. And there's a few things when I think about winter, like the looking across a lake or like Lake Zurich or something. Things like that that are just, you know, you feel like they're just one in a lifetime experiences. And I have the opportunity and the ability, I hope, to illustrate those moments in music. And it's hard to talk about because it's music. It's like talking about a painting, you know, which is sometimes easier because it's visual, but talking about music is, it can be challenging. And when I think about how I'm going to illustrate things, one of the most important things, I think, is coming up with the palette that I'm going to use. Like, there's some sounds that I just wouldn't use. Like on Winterlude, there's some piano, there's some strings, there's some harp, there's some bells, there's things that I associate with the winter. And that's another treat, is to be able to go from instrument to instrument and just be able to make all these sounds.
And with Winterlude especially, you could have 10 people who listen to it and they will have 10 different interpretations for each song of what it means to them, what they see, what they feel, and every single one of them is right.
For sure. A long time ago, I learned that I could paint pictures with my music. And then I would talk to people who said, oh, I love this song. You know what I see? And they're even with the title was super literal, I couldn't believe how many different pictures people were looking at, or little images that they got from a song that I thought was clearly about X. They got all this other stuff. And so I'm just happy that people, that they get some imagery, that I put something down that evokes something.
Yeah. And whether you look at the title, The Icy Brook Finds Its Way, if you've never, you know, there are plenty of people who spend their whole lives in the city, maybe never have seen a brook, let alone when it's icy and flowing and chunks are falling off, or maybe they're not, whatever the case may be. Maybe they don't have a frame of reference for that, but they've seen enough movies where they get something from it.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I've actually seen a little icy brook.
I don't want to go track by track through this because I want people to be able to experiencing it, but I do want to talk about a couple, because I saw Darkening Skies on there and my first thought was, oh, this is a Halloween song. But and I guess it could be, but as I listen to it, I feel fall moving into winter and sunset is getting earlier and all of that kind of stuff that goes with it.
Yeah, I have said, and I'll say again, I like writing music that has the energy of weather. And I don't know if it's because where I live, it's, you know, 350 days out of the year, there's not much weather. It's not much different. But I live like 10 minutes from the ocean, and, you know, you do get fog and, you know, all that. But, and that's some kind of weather. But like when you go to Colorado or New Mexico, I remember especially in New Mexico, I was driving from Texas to California and there was a lightning storm like I had never seen. And I stopped just to look at it. And then pretty soon it was all around me. I was in the middle of it. And it was so exciting. You know, I was hoping it didn't get, the car didn't hit, but it hit. But it was, those kind of things are powerful to me, you know, when I see that, you know, obviously there's hurricanes and things like that. I don't want to go that far, but it's exciting to see a storm approaching for me. I know that may be silly because people are like, oh no, another storm where they live. But that's where that song came from, which was, you know, a lot of times in winter, there are more storms than the rest of the year in places. And so that's where that came from. I did a song four albums ago on Turning of the Year called Storm Clouds. And it's the same kind of inspiration. I just came up with a whole other way to look at it musically.
It's very interesting. I mean, the titles certainly get you started evoking images. But I did, I'm in Florida, but when I was listening to this and I was listening to The Return of Jack Frost, I did need to get up and get some hot cocoa.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, you know, I've fluctuate between you know, titling a song on the nose or being a little bit more mysterious, you know, that's a little bit more of a challenge for me because I have a pretty clear idea in my head when I'm composing the song. And it's hard to just not go there, like on Winterlude. It's like when I talk about it, when we play it in concert, I don't even know why I talk about it because the title says it all. Warm lights flicker across the lake. I mean, it's like, it's so on the nose. I just tell the story of how I got to the lake. But it's titles like those or, you know, Kisses from the Falling Snow. That is one of those songs that's inspired by that snowfall, that gentle snowfall I was talking about. And the return of Jack Frost, to me, I was very excited when I thought of that title because it has motion. You know, it can mean so many things to different people, you know. Anyway, the titling is always tricky. Sometimes I start with it. Sometimes I don't.
You know, I think anybody, no matter where you live, at some point as fall moves into winter, you get one of those days where there's a cold snap, mm-hmm. where the weather takes a dip, even in San Diego. And I think everybody can identify with the return of Jack Frost, even if it's only for a day or two. This time of year, you get it.
Yes, you do. And I just thought it was a fun title, you know, because a lot of the other titles are just super serious. And I'm not that serious of a person, even though musically it looks like that a lot. And I just wanted something a little bit whimsical in there.
Hey, you're sort of taking the show on the road with the Winterlude for a winter's eve with David Arkenstone and friends heading out next month. Is any chance that this is going to be recorded and maybe people who aren't in those areas will get to see it?
I'm hoping that we can do a live stream along the way. I know we were talking about doing a radio recording at the very beginning of it for some station. So maybe that can be incorporated into it. But I'm hoping, like on our fall tour, we ended in Berkeley and we did a live stream of that. And that's available. That's going to be available out there really soon. I'm hoping to do the same thing with this tour because it's a whole different set of songs. And I would like to, you know, immortalize it.
For anybody who's interested, I'll put a couple links down in the show notes where you can get some ticket info for a winter's eve with David Arkenstone and friends. And you've done so much Christmas music. I hate to ask, but anything percolating about more?
You know, you're right. I have done so much. You know, the last one I did, I think, was the native Christmas one, which was fun because it's challenging playing a native flute on songs that people know by heart because it's got a limited note capacity. You can't play every note, at least on the flutes I have. And that's what makes them actually really cool flutes. So you have to kind of skirt around it and it makes you go different ways. So I haven't, you know, I did Winterlude and I'm pretty happy with my winter collection and Christmas collection, but you know, something else could occur to me. You know, we do a couple arrangements in the show of some holiday music that I have not recorded. So that could be the impetus to do yet another Christmas album someday. Probably not next year, but I don't know. One of the fun things, by the way, of working on Christmas music, at least when you're with a record label, is you're doing it like in July or August because of the lead time they need to manufacture it, promote it, all that. So it's a really interesting thing to be doing it in July.
Was it hard to sort of get in that mindset in July?
I know it kind of was at first. You know, I did one song when I was living in Utah. On the second, I did a version of We Three Kings when I was living in Utah, but that was in the summer. But I had just gone through the winter, you know, in Park City, so it was still fresh enough. I could grasp it.
So Winterlude just came out and you're getting ready for the Winter's Eve tour. What's next? What does 2024 look like for you?
Wow. 2024, I have some ideas for doing some ambient records like a quartet of ambient records that are a little bit just that ambient, not so, you know, active, I guess. But I do get the urge to do another sort of epic record. You know, I don't know if the I just need to figure out the framework for it, the overall. But those things are percolating. You know, right now nothing's percolating except this tour, because it takes every bit of concentration to prepare for it, and I have to practice a bunch of songs that I wrote or arranged and I don't remember. So I have to work on that. I mean, I remember them, but you know, I need to bring them up a level, let's put it that way. And it's fun, you know, it's fun revisiting it, because some of the first, like when the Neurotic Christmas album came out, I think that was around 89, we did a tour, David Lons and I and some other people, my brother Dan, we did a tour of shopping malls that the record company had booked. And some of those, like, I had a couple Christmas songs. I had Three Ships, and we played a couple other songs from In the Wake of the Wind. And David played his, he had already done a Christmas album, I think. And when I play these songs, it takes me right back to that moment, because that was the first time I was playing my Christmas music arrangements for people. And back then, I mean, we played, you know, like in December. So there used to be record stores like Sam Goody or Music Plus in the mall. And so we'd play these songs and then we'd go down to the record store to sign them. And there was like hundreds of people in line. It was so amazing. So it's fun now to play those songs or practice them and think and just have those thoughts come up, you know. And I have a lot of other Christmas memories, of course, that don't involve touring. But then when I got on Windham Hill, we did several tours with that ensemble, and that was really fun. We had a bus, and it was really, really enjoyable. So now we don't have a bus, but we get from place to place. And the band is so good, and the music changes every night, and it's a joyful experience. It's just we enjoy it, and I think it just spills over to the audience.
You know, the scheduling can be a bit of a challenge, shall we say. Yeah. Have you thought about recording something with David Arkenstone and friends?
We actually have a live album we did over the last year and a half. There's some songs, not holiday songs, but we have a live album in the works, and it's going to be on sale at this tour at the merch table. And then it'll probably be released early next year.
What's the best way for people to keep up with you? Through your website, social media?
Yeah, the website. There is a Linktree list. I mean, a URL that you could put in somewhere. I don't know it by heart.
I'll put that down in the show notes too.
Yeah, because the Linktree has everything. It has, you know, I've done some podcasts. It has our tour dates. It has where you can buy Winterlude, all that stuff. So it's a good source.
Okay. I'll make sure to put that down in the show notes too. Anything that you think people would like to know before I let you go?
Well, I'm honored that you want to spend this much time with me. And I love that your questions make me think about my history. And, you know, that's really enjoyable to kind of walk down that lane and think about where I am now. Because I think Winterlude, I feel like I get better with time and experience. And like when I listen to my early records, yeah, they're pretty good, but I never would use that synth sound now or whatever. There's always something that's like, you know, it's not terrible because nobody would have let that go, but it's just like, I don't know. And some of the albums are stamped in time, you know, that's the way things sounded. But I think I'm getting better as a composer and being able to illustrate the things that are in my head and being able to take that and do it on the road in front of people where you get the joy back and forth so quickly. Because when you release a record, you put it out there and, oh, look, it's number one on Amazon or whatever. But you don't know those people. You have no connection with them, which is why I started a special Facebook group. But still, all these people maybe purchased the record or listened to the record. You don't know who they are. When you play live, they're right there in front of you, you know, 8 feet away. And so it's thrilling to be able to share the music in such an immediate way.
And to get the energy back.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially. Well, you know, because you're musicians, I think most are well, you're there to perform. I mean, part of your soul as a musician is to play for people. Unless you want to just be in your studio all your life, which is another fine thing to do. But a lot of us grew up in bands and we want to still be in a band and still make music as a unit for people. So it's thrilling to do that. It's kind of a long legacy that we're continuing.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's great. Thanks for being so prepared.
I'm very appreciative that you came on, and I wanted to, and I knew that there was I already had played so much of your music. I thought I should really take a look. I didn't realize there were so many Christmas albums, so I got to go back and get some of the ones that I've missed. But yeah, because I got to, it's like Pokemon. I got to catch them all.
yeah.
Well, yeah. Thank you very much. I'm very appreciative, and I hope the tour is a huge success.
Thank you. It's looking good for now. And I hope we hit a little bit of snow, even though the places we play, they don't like hearing that.
Yeah. It's nice to, I lived in enough places where there was snow every year that I wouldn't mind going to visit it.
Yes.
But I don't want it to come visit me.
Well, that's why it's fun for me. I can drive there and take the band there, and then we leave at the end of the tour.
I like not having to scrape my windshield every day.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Great. Well, thank you, Ken. Thanks so much.
And thank you so much for listening and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I told you how to listen to the station, and you're already listening to the podcast, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab, and we have a Linktree page with most, if not all, of the sites that stream our podcast. So you can find us on your favorite streaming site, and then subscribe, and you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.